Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Tonight, I was expecting a wonderful surprise guest for you. But there's been some delay in travel plans, so I'm going to hang in there a little bit and talk for a while in hopes that she'll make it, and if not, we'll just reschedule this show. First, I would like to let everybody know that our next healing weekend is planned for April 12th and 13th in California, and I am so excited about this weekend. It's going to be the best one ever, because of the speakers and the workshops that we have going on and the women who will be coming there. It will be the most uplifting weekend you could ever spend anywhere. We have a beautiful hotel. We have wonderful speakers, great food. And, of course, being in Southern California, you can never go wrong. If you're interested in joining this healing weekend, please write to me at bonk@aol.com. That's bonk@aol.com. And just put in the box healing, or you can go to my website at gayhusbandswithans.com, and there it announces the healing weekend, and you can just click into that box, and in that box you can just send me an email saying you're interested in getting information. I am going to have to limit the weekend due to the space and the number of people who want to be coming in. So the first 25 commitments is it. Unfortunately, I have to really limit it because of all the workshops we're doing and the timing that we have. But it will be the most important weekend that you can ever imagine. If you've been to some of the other healing weekends, nobody ever walks out the same. You know, just having that camaraderie, that friendship, people who are willing to share their stories, just like you're willing to share your story. And You don't have to, but most people want to, because you see the connections there and you see how it all intertwines and you see how much you have in common with other women. As you all know, the situation is extremely isolating. Extremely isolating. You always feel that you're on your own, and you're always wondering, who can I tell without feeling like you're being judged? And unfortunately, there's not a lot of people. One of the things that I'm trying to do is to find some kind of A-list movie star who's willing to work with our group as far as standing up for us, just like all those other causes have actresses and show business people. So this is my new search now, to find someone who will be willing to stand up and espouse our cause for us and let people know that we have been injured and we have been victimized, but we are strong women and we're not going to sit down and just let become victims. That we're going to stand up, we're going to fight for our lives, to take them back, and that's how you'll have a successful, happy life. You know, when you're in these marriages, it's never easy, and all of us know that one of the problems is that you're always losing your self-esteem and feeling that, you know, there's no hope, that you don't have a future. And that's because when you're living with somebody who's making you feel worthless, this often happens. But there's a lot of things that you can do, you know, to build up your self-esteem. And I'm going to talk a little bit about them tonight. One of my favorite guests always is Dr. Margalef Celstad, and she has wonderful books on healing. And I'll give you her information, you know, before we finish. But in her newest book, she has a section on your self-esteem. And I just wanted to go over some of the facts, you know, and she will be on our show again shortly. But she mentions that how you feel depends on what you think and believe about yourself and the situation and the resources you have available, even more than the event itself. And it says, this chapter shows you how to repair the way you look at yourself and your situation and restore your confidence in yourself so you can regain your sense of well-being, strength, and motivation. And this is called healing your damaged self-esteem. You might have thought that the narcissist was going to make your life wonderful, and now you have found out that it was just the opposite. You can still remember the good times, the feeling of everything going just right, of being the sole focus of the narcissist's attention. That is a heady feeling, very addictive. But the narcissist has two sides, and you don't get just the one side. You always get both. You did not cause the narcissist to idealize you, nor did you cause the narcissist's current hostility, blame, and rejection. Those behaviors are entirely under the control of the narcissist, not you. Stop now taking responsibility for the narcissist's actions. Begin paying attention to your own behaviors and focus on making choices about what you need and want to do to make your life better. Taking action helps move you out of the feeling of being a victim. You don't have to be a victim. Even though you have felt victimized by the narcissist, you do not have to feel like a victim or act like a victim. Try changing your label of victim to the word disappointed. It's amazing what this change can do for you and how you think about your current situation. When you identify yourself as a victim, you end up feeling hopeless and helpless. You tend to focus only on your pain, discouraging your strength and overlooking the people who love and care about you. You feel like giving up. You feel somehow singled out and like a failure. When you identify your feelings as disappointment, it helps you move them to a more normal grouping that you know you can handle. After all, who hasn't been disappointed? You have coped with disappointments before and gotten over them. This may have been a bigger disappointment, but really what you're facing is having to make decisions and changes that you don't feel like they don't fit and what you thought would happen. That is disappointment. For example, failure would be saying, I'm a failure at relationships. Disappointment is, this relationship didn't work out the way I expected. Failure would be, no one will ever love me again. Disappointment is, I'm sad that John doesn't love me, but I know that my friends and family love me. Failure is, here I am alone again. What a failure. Disappointment is, it's a real setback that the relationship I counted on is over. I didn't really want this to happen. It's hard to rebuild your life when you see yourself as a failure. It leaves you with no hope. On the other hand, seeing this experience as a disappointment inspires you to think of the bigger picture in your life. You can see yourself and your experiences more as a whole. It's easier when you can remember that you have friends and other loved ones who care about you and support you. You have skills, traits, and abilities that you can use to restore your life. Seeing this event as an unwanted change rather than a disaster can spur your creativity and problem-solving abilities to jump in and start responding. The first thing here is give yourself compassion. You're not a bad person, nor are you stupid or wrong just because this relationship has ended. Nearly 50% of all marriages in the United States end in divorce. Surely you wouldn't label everyone whose relationship ended unhappily as negatively as you are labeling yourself. You will improve your self-esteem immeasurably by being more compassionate towards yourself. Talk with yourself the way you talk to your dearest friend if she or he were going through the same experience. What would you say to ease the pain? What words of encouragement would you give? You wouldn't be threatening, accusing, blaming, or self-righteous. Stop all these forms of self-judgment. Negative self-attacks are leftover repeats of what the narcissist has said to you in the past. Letting go of the narcissist includes letting go of his or her invalidations and consequently choosing to treat yourself in a loving and considerate manner. Next point, she says, soothe your body. Underlying your grief are body sensations and raw emotions that actually cause pain, fatigue, low energy, and apathy. When you go through a wrenching experience, your body can become achy, tense, and jumpy, making it difficult to eat, sleep restfully, or recover from feeling continually exhausted. If you don't take care of your body's responses to all of the stresses, it can become vulnerable to migraines, intestinal upsets, backaches, and even more serious ailments such as autoimmune responses. Good physical care must not be overlooked. If you are feeling angry, hard, crunchy foods can. If you are feeling angry, hard, crunchy foods can help you feel better. If you are hurting or feeling low, soft, smooth foods can be comforting. Consciously consider the foods you're eating and choose ones that really make you feel good. Linda lived on shrimp for a month after her divorce. Henry chewed through 2 pounds of carrots and said he really helped relieve his anger. Beware of high sugar foods, however, when you are depressed. They actually make you feel worse. Get adequate sleep. Keep regular times and have soothing routine times before bed. Even try rearranging your bedroom to get rid of the bed you shared with the narcissist if old memories keep you awake. Listen to quiet music, read, or journal. Do not spend time right before bed doing anything that will bring thoughts of anger about the narcissist or fears about your future. Spending time actively relaxing your body, get a massage. Spend time in a hot tub or sauna, take a bath, or take a yoga health class. These are all things that can help you when you stretch out your muscles a couple times a day. Anger, fear, and sadness all tend to trigger your muscles to tense up. When you are tense, your blood flow is compromised, and you will have trouble thinking and will get tired very easily. These are all good points that Dr. Felstead brings up as far as, you know, how to build yourself up again after a relationship that's failed, and especially in a relationship that's failed, making you feel like you're the failure, because that's the problem. Many times with our relationships, that's how we feel. We feel as if we are failures. She always gives tasks in this new book, which I love. This task is think about which of your friends, family, and acquaintances are the most objective, realistic, and overall kind, and reach out to them. Spend time with them, notice how they treat you, and how you feel around them. If you have the courage, ask some of them for feedback about how they see you. Have them write down the qualities and traits they see in you. You could also ask for a list of your strengths and even a list of things you need to develop or learn to, in order to heal. Oftentimes, the people who love and care about you are just waiting for a sign from you that you would be receptive to their assistance and support. And that's very true. People are not mind readers. You have to let them know. You may think that you don't need a support group. That's why you're going through a private, going through this privately, and that you can or you should be able to do it on your own. However, we humans very much need each other for support and emotional tending when we go through difficult and painful existences. Exclusion, shunning, and solitary confinement are in the most powerful punishments there are for humans. You have been too isolated. In order to heal, you need to be around people. Being socially connected to other people builds up your self-esteem. When you're around people who accept you and appreciate you, healing will move along much more quickly. Then she mentions self-encouragement, which is a very big factor also. The narcissist spent a lot of time telling you over and over that you didn't do right, and that it's very likely that those messages are still playing in your mind. It takes conscious effort and attention to change those messages. You can't just push them away. You have to actively dislodge them with positive encouragement and reassurance. It always feels good when others are the ones giving you that encouragement, but someone can't always be by your side. You are the only person who is always there, so you are the best one to take on the role of self-encouragement. When you're afraid, discouraged, and feeling alone, it can feel very difficult to face all of these changes and losses that you're experiencing. The next step is to figure out what feelings you would like to have instead and gain the strength to get there. That strength is developed permanently, primarily by your own self-encouragement and advocacy. What you say to yourself is vitally important. You may not have been paying much attention to your own inner monologue. So start noticing how you talk to yourself. Do you talk to yourself as you? For example, you should, you can't, you are. This will create a sense of discouragement. It feels like someone outside of yourself passing judgment or controlling you. By making two small changes, you can start increasing your self-esteem and your courage. Change you to I and make the action positive instead of negative. Start saying, I want, I can, I am. And then she gives some good examples, which I'll read to you. This is discouraging. You have to make the bed. Encouraging is, I want to enjoy a clean house. Discouraging, you should make that call to Ted. Encouraging is, I want to get this call over with so I can relax. Discouraging is, you can't get all of this done. Encouraging is, I can take one thing at a time. Discouraging is, you know you are likely to fail. Encouraging is, I can give this a try. Discouraging is, you are so stupid. Encouraging is, I am capable of doing what I need to do. Discouraging is, you are a loser. Encouraging is, I am kind and considerate. Changing what you say to yourself and how you treat yourself are the fastest ways to grow your self-esteem. Next, Dr. Felstad says, give yourself time. Healing a damaged self-esteem takes time. The longer you are in a relationship with the narcissist, the longer it may take. Emotional and psychological change isn't a fast fix. Just like building muscle strength, it takes practice to change these old habits and internal messages. Think about building your inner self-encourager the same way you're going to the gym to help build your body. Get into a routine with constant effort and attention. The results will be well worth the effort. And then she gives at the end of the chapter, as she does in every chapter in this book, which is why I love her new book, questions for reflection. What feels different to you between feeling like a victim and feeling disappointed? What ways are you giving yourself compassion? Who gives you compassion? How are you nurturing and healing your body? What else could you do that would be healing? What challenges do you face reaching out to others? What are your most comforting, self-encouraging statements? Try talking to yourself from I rather than you. What do you notice? And practice making a positive statement to yourself instead of a negative one. How does that feel? And those are some of Dr. Felstad's, you know, hints on how to build self-esteem. We've had a number of speakers over the years come in here and talk about how to build self-esteem and how to be positive with yourself. which is really easy to say and not very hard to do for many of us, especially if we didn't start out with the highest of self-esteem and people continually try to knock it down. And that's what's so difficult, is starting to believe that those messages of knocking you down were lies. They were incorrect. They had nothing to do with you. They were because of your husband's or your ex-husband's own insecurities and how he feels about himself. And because he didn't want to deal with it, he made you the victim of it. And that's the problem. So it's easy to say, as far as, yes, I have to give myself, you know, messages, but I know it's really difficult to do it. One of the things I wanted to talk about tonight, since we don't have a guest, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about bisexuality. I've been receiving a lot of letters lately from women and from men who challenge me or ask me. I shouldn't say they're all challenging. Sometimes they're just asking me about bisexuality. They challenge me when I send them my article that I'll be reading to you as far as what my feelings are on bisexuality. But sometimes, you know, it really is what they need to understand their situation better. Many women are really misled by that word bisexuality when their husbands or boyfriends or relationships tell them that they're not gay, they're just bi-curious. So this is an article I wrote many years ago, and I really stand by it, so I'd like to share it with you since we have time tonight. And it's called Bisexuality, Illusion and Delusion. I hear it all the time, and I've heard it for years. My husband is not gay, he is bisexual. Or I hear from the husbands that there's no way I'm gay, I have bisexual tendencies. 15 years ago, when I started counseling wives and straight gay couples, I would get angry when those words would start the conversation after informal pleasantries. I was in the beginning stages of my own recovery, and my anger from the lies and deceit of my ex-husband during our marriage was still too fresh in my mind. But now, years later, I can calmly discuss this issue with objectivity and understanding because most of my pain and anger is gone. I do admit, though, that the whole issue still irritates me. And once again, this was written 15 years ago, but I still stand by it. So it's been 30 years since I, you know, been working with this. Let's talk reality. What is bisexuality anyway? A married gay man who has sex with his wife but still sexually desires a man? A man who lives a straight life with a wife and children to shield him in public while he has homosexual encounters on the side? A man who claims he's attracted to both men and women but still needs a man when he's with a woman? I think not. Bisexuality is an excuse. For gay men, it is an illusion, creating a picture that allows them to fit into the straight world. For their straight wives, it's a delusion, creating a justification for keeping the marriage together. If straight gay couples choose to keep their marriage together for whatever reasons, that is the choice they make. But the problem with using bisexuality as the justification only postpones the inevitable of facing the real issue. I say this at the beginning, rather at the end, because it's important to keep this thought in mind while you siphon through the following discussion. First, let's look at the overall picture. Most women don't understand homosexuality. I didn't. That's what I learned from, I thought a person is attracted to someone of the same sex. That's what I learned from an early age, and no one disputed those facts. Yes, I heard about movie stars that married and turned out to be gay, but those were Hollywood stories, and in the movies, anything goes. It didn't have any sense of reality to me. I recognized gay people once I reached my mid to late teens. Everyone could identify them because they were always stood out. The gay guys were effeminate and flamboyant. They always had girlfriends around, but no girlfriends. Girls loved them because they were wonderful confidants, advice givers, and fashion experts. They would gossip with you, help you fashion your hair, and confirm whether or not your choice in men would have been their choice. And we never understood what made men gay. We only knew it was wrong. We couldn't visualize two men being passionate together like we were with men when we fell in love with, like the men we fell in love with. We could intellectualize it, but we couldn't imagine it without thinking that there was something sick and demented about it. There was no way we could ever suspect that we could marry someone gay and not know it. So So how did it happen? How could something that seems so clear become so jumbled and confusing? How could our judgment be so off target? Easy. It was our misconception of gay. We didn't know that there were gay men who had the ability to perform sexually with a woman, even though it certainly was not a preference. Not all gay men can do this, but some can. Does it mean they want to have sex with a woman? Not really. Given the choice, they are not going to pick you. But the problem is, those gay men who can perform with women believe they don't have a choice. These are men caught between two worlds that are really lost. They are emotionally straight, but physically gay. They don't emotionally fit into the gay world, and they are hoping that their ability to perform heterosexually will take away the nagging physical attraction they have for men. They can't come to terms with themselves because they too have been taught that there is something morally wrong with being gay. And so they live a lie, living it with you and resenting you for it. They misplace their own frustrations on their wives and express it through anger and hostility where it hurts the most. Some husbands do come to terms with their homosexuality at some point, but there's no way to predict when this will happen. A year, two, 10, 20, 40. I've seen it take place at all different times. But many married gay men were never able to give up their comfort and safety of living the straight world, even if it wasn't quite as comfortable as they would like it to be. The challenge alone in finding ways to avoid sexual relationships with your wife has to be exhausting. No matter how difficult living a lie may be, it's easier than being part of the gay world. How do they know that? Because they have explored the gay world, even if it is from a distance. They tested the waters, putting in one toe at a time, never able to submerge the whole foot. The gay world wasn't something they could identify with, and it was a bunch of freaks who blatantly bragged to the outside world that they were proud of this fluke in nature. It lacked sincerity, commitment, and depth. Everything was focused on one thing, sex. They saw public displays of the gay bars, which men would be embracing each other and passionately kissing. They watched men dancing together and grinding their bodies in a lewd manner. They were approached by young male prostitutes on the street in the gay neighborhoods offering all kinds of sexual services for money. They read the gay newspapers and looked through the personal ads, which may have been sexually excited them, but emotionally repulsed them. And what they saw, they hated. They were overcome with a sense of shame and revulsion. This was definitely not who they were. And so they ran back to the safety net. They ran home to their marriage, thinking of ways to fulfill those deepening urges without revealing their identity. At some point, these men find the opportunity to act on their homosexual needs and think it's okay. Why? Because they're not gay, merely bisexual. Big deal. What does it have to do with you anyway? It's not like they're cheating on you with another woman. You should feel better about that. Don't take it personally. It's just a character flaw that you can learn to live with. If you really love your husband, you should be willing to overlook this little male indiscretions and his occasional weaknesses that he has no control over. And then there is you, the wife, who finally learns what is ripping apart your self-esteem day by day. Now it all makes sense. Your husband is bisexual. You were worried it was another woman. You may have even suspected that your husband was homosexual. What a relief. Here you thought divorce was looming overhead, for reasons unknown, but now you know this was a workable problem. Bisexual. You have a fighting chance to make the marriage work, right? Wrong. When my ex-husband alluded to being bisexual during one and only one conversation in our marriage, I wasn't exactly stunned. There were hints building up over time that pointed me in that direction. So it was somewhat of a relief when he didn't blow up or dispute my accusation. Bisexual. It sure sounded and felt much better than homosexual, which was my greatest fear. I could work with bisexual because it meant there was a chance of pulling my husband over the middle line to my side of the fence. All I had to do was make myself into the dream wife that would make him forget about looking elsewhere. I could take away those twinges of desire he felt for men by becoming more attractive and loving. And I justified that I could live with this problem as long as it was under my terms and conditions. In the spirit of compromise necessary in every good marriage, I made my list. If you have to go out every 6 months or so to take care of your business, I can live with it. As long as you satisfy whatever needs you have with someone of consenting age, I can live with it. As long as I never have to know anything about this phase of your life, I can live with it. Of course, this agreement was pushing me even further into the state of delusion. Once I knew that my husband wanted to have sex with men, it didn't matter what the classification of his sexuality was. I started obsessing and panicking every time he walked out the door without an explanation. Was this going to be the day? Who was he with? If he was bisexual, why couldn't I satisfy his needs? That's the problem. Intellectually, we can filter the information that we are not at fault. But when your husband engages in sex with a man emotionally, we don't believe it. Although your husband justifies to himself that he is not cheating because it's a man, after a while, you can't. Infidelity is infidelity. Cheating is cheating. Do you feel better that he's bestowing his passion on a man, the passion he's never had for you? I was scared and nervous once I faced the truth. I didn't want to break up my marriage. I loved my husband, even though he treated me with contempt. I could never do anything right in his eyes because subconsciously I stood between him and happiness. I was cramping his style, but as time went on, he grew bolder and stopped caring about what I thought. Throughout our marriage, my husband denied being gay. After our, quote, bisexual agreement, he denied ever admitting anything. He claimed he just went along with my paranoid thoughts to placate me. By this time, it was harder to fool me. I knew the signs, like the glances at attractive young men that lasted far too long, or the camaraderie with males that far exceeded the boundaries of friendship. After the breakup of my marriage, my husband was able to jump into the water full force and try to find his place in the gay world. He wasn't sure where he belonged, although he had been physically part of that world for years before I met him. He had a love-hate relationship with the gay community. He knew what he wanted sexually, but he found the gay lifestyle empty. The straight lifestyle offered him a security blanket, a loving wife, adorable children, respectability, stability. Who wouldn't want that? For gay men who marry, they believe they can have the best of both worlds, the American dream plus the extra dream on the side. But at what expense to that devoted wife who trusts him to be honest and faithful? Believe me, I am sympathetic to women who are scared to face the truth. I was one of them, and it was the most difficult struggle I've ever dealt with. My ground rules of what I could live with kept changing as my husband became bolder and less secretive. And each time I had to modify those ground rules to his advantage, I became broken down mentally because I was giving into something I couldn't accept, a way of life that was unacceptable in a marriage. The worst part was that I believed it was my personal failure. If my husband was bisexual, I must have been doing something wrong, or otherwise he would want to be with me instead of a man. Most gay men are wonderful to their wives when they feel an empowering sense of guilt for their indiscretions. They are not looking to intentionally hurt their wives, and much like the abuse syndrome, all kinds of promises of change and reform are made when they are caught. It's like the honeymoon is starting all over again, giving the wife a false sense of desperately needed hope. The husband becomes loving, giving, and even semi-passionate for a time to prove his little mistake is in the past and should be forgiven and forgotten. But it usually doesn't take long before the big pull starts. That's just the way it is when nature takes its course. And each time it happens, the wife becomes more alert to the warning signs and can almost anticipate what's around the corner when her husband leaves the house. It all comes down to what you're willing to live with. If your husband is having sex with men, you can call it whatever name you want. But as the old saying goes, a rose by any other name is still a rose. A man who has sexual relations with a man is still a gay man in my book. And a final warning for those of you whose husbands keep reassuring you that they have these gay attractions but never acted on them. Don't believe it. In almost all cases, they have acted on their needs either prior to or during your marriage. They may claim that these are just watching gay porno movies or reading gay magazines to satisfy these urges, but that's usually a ploy to make you feel better and throw you off track. I have met hundreds of gay husbands in marriages, leaving marriages, and after their marriages. At some point during their marriage, most of them were having gay sex in one form or another through casual dating, one-night stands, or full-fledged relationships and lying to their wives to protect their marriage. We desperately want to believe the lies they tell us. Even when the truth is smacking us right in the face, we believe their excuses because the truth is too painful to accept. We build a layer in our subconscious thinking that I refer to as limbo, a state of mind where we exist day to day without living life because we're hurting too badly. And some women are able to live their lives this way indefinitely rather than give themselves the chance at real happiness and fulfillment. I understand this. Sometimes we are so mentally weakened from dealing with a horrific situation that we feel unable to stand up and make a change. Certainly, I'm not one to judge when a woman is ready, if ever, to make that move. I don't know if I would have had the courage and the confidence to make that choice if my ex-husband didn't make it for me. When you lose all of your self-confidence and self-worth, it's hard to believe that you even deserve a chance at happiness. And so you walk through the days and the nights, sitting in limbo, waiting for a miracle, because you don't have the strength to realize that you can walk away from this trap. The only way you will ever regain any of your mental strength back is to stop making excuses for your husband's gay behavior and by labeling it as bisexual. Look at things for what they are and don't let him tell you otherwise. If he wants to keep fooling himself, fine, but don't let him keep fooling you. Each day that you can say, my husband is gay, you will find yourself growing stronger because you can look at your marriage for what it is, not for what it's not, and not for what you wish it would be. Only then will you be able to start thinking about the right move for yourself, your future, and for your long-deserved happiness in the world of the living, not the world of the existing. Well, I have to say that article really moved me even now, 15 years later. I'm really impressed as far as doing that. But now, also, I'd like to read you another story. And we're going to go on to that because I think these articles are really important. So just give me one moment, and I'm going to find the story after that, which will be, one moment, Limbo Land. And that's what I'm going to finish with tonight. It's Living La Vida Limbo. Let's discuss married gay men who won't leave the marriage, or for that matter, won't leave the closet. This is a subject that can never be talked about enough because it seems to be a stumbling block for so many of us who can't get our husbands to come clean with the truth about their homosexuality. I receive so many letters from each month from women who are not are sure about their husbands but fear confronting them. But I also get letters from women who do confront their husbands with evidence in hand and get denials with distorted truths, giving excuses such as, those pictures belong to a coworker, or I have no clue how those websites got on our computer. For those women who have husbands who eventually tell you the truth, count yourselves as lucky even though you may not feel that way at the time. No doubt hearing the word gay is devastating, but not hearing it is even worse. Ask a woman who was trapped in an unfulfilling marriage with a gay man. These women know the truth. They have stumbled on it one way or another. It has smacked them in the face through hidden websites, email, pornography, letters, hotel receipts, phone bills, etc., and yet their husbands just keep lying or denying. They are not ready to be honest and may never be ready. Some men will never be ready to accept their homosexuality because it is too painful or embarrassing. These are the men whom I call limbo men. Their whole lives are lived in limbo. They're emotionally straight but physically gay. They never feel totally comfortable in either world, but they are much more comfortable passing in the straight world where they are accepted as part of mainstream society. All married gay men go through limbo for a period of time. In other words, they're stuck in between both worlds, hoping that by wanting the straight world badly enough, they will be able to cross over into it. They keep thinking that if they play the role long enough, they will become transformed into the part, not the part they play. Into the part. Okay, if they are able to cross over. They keep thinking that if they play the part long enough, they'll become transformed into the part, not just play the part as an actor. But the limbo men I place in this category are different from other gay men who eventually come to terms with themselves. They are even different than gay men who are staying in marriages but who acknowledge they are gay, at least on some level. The real limbo men have no sense of remorse for what they're doing to their wives. In fact, they often feel as though they are the victims and strike back at their wives for the emotional or physical abusive manner. They blame their wives for their unhappiness and never have a clue about the damage they are doing to these women whom they promise to love, cherish, and respect. They place the blame on their unhappiness on their wives when, in fact, there is nothing their wives could possibly do to make them feel happy or fulfilled. Their wives are women, and they are gay men. These are the men who will never leave their marriages. They will stay there until the day they die, leading a painful existence and sharing that pain with their wives. More specifically, pouring that pain on their wives. We all know that misery loves company, and these men are happy to make you as miserable as they are. So often, these limbo men husbands luck out. They have wives who are much kinder and much more understanding than average. These are the women who will keep trying every little trick in the book, thinking someday they will get their husbands hooked. The women live in an accepted existence, looking for crumbs in the marriage while trying to turn those crumbs into a cake. It is truly a tragedy and a waste of human life. And then I have my description of limbo women. Limbo men create a whole new category of straight wives, namely limbo women. Limbo women are the wives of limbo men who are stuck wasting years of their lives in unsatisfying marriages because they can never quite get the truth out of their husbands. They know that something is wrong. They know that their marriages are lacking the ingredients for success, namely communication, passion, and intimacy. They've had loads of little clues that all add up to homosexuality, and yet, because they can't get a full confession or even a partial confession, they are trapped. By the time the wife of a limbo man gives a confession, it's usually a partial one, such as, "I'm not gay, but I like looking at gay pornography as part of a full pornographic fantasy show. I'm not gay, but when I was younger, I had an uncle who molested me on a few occasions. I'm not gay, but sometimes I call gay sex lines because the talk stimulates me sexually. I'm not gay, but when I was younger, before I met you, I had a one-time sexual encounter with a man. But I only let him perform oral sex on me. I'm not gay, but there are times I think I'm bisexual because I look at guys and find them sexually appealing. I would never act on it, though. I'm not gay, but sometimes the thought of anal penetration turns me on. I'm not gay, but when I was in college, we would all get stoned or drunk and have big orgies where everyone was having sex with everyone. I'm not gay, but I have a fantasy about both of us having sex with another man." The sad part is that each one of these partial confessions always starts the same way. "I'm not gay, but." And now the wife is more trapped than ever. How could they break up a marriage just on their own perceptions based on partial truths? I have wives that write to me about the extensive research they do on human sexuality. They are looking for my stamp of endorsement for their discoveries that their husbands aren't gay, just sexually different or deviant. It seems as if they can get my professional opinion that their situation is not like the thousands of others that I've worked with, they can learn to cope in their marriages and accept that life isn't always a bowl of cherries. On the other hand, it's not always a bowl of pits either. It's actually a bowl of half-eaten cherries with the pits still intact, sometimes anyway. These women struggle more than those of us who are given our walking papers, or as I like to call it, freedom. Those of us riding this freedom trail may be hurting for a while, but eventually we can lick our wounds and start life over. We don't have to have the shackles of homosexuality tying us to a husband who just won't be honest with us in many cases himself. Limbo women have the lowest self-esteem of all of us because they do personalize that the lack of love their husbands can show them sexually is because of their failings. After they've exhausted every trick known to womanhood without any success or movement, they admit defeat. Nothing they do makes change. No diet, no breast implant, no sexy clothes, new hairstyle, no new approaches to sexual satisfaction is going to move their husbands into the straight zone. Eventually, they admit defeat, but still don't understand why everything they try is not working on anything in their relationship. Some of these wives cope by developing their own on-the-side personal lives. They meet some straight man on the internet who can boost their self-esteem by telling them all the things their husband should be saying but don't say. Sometimes these internet affairs are lifesavers when women start giving up hope on themselves. Some of these wives cope by finding real-life affairs going outside the boundaries of their morals, religious beliefs, and vows, making them feel better on one end but worse on the other. And still other women cope by popping pills that numb their minds and lower their libido just so they can keep living in the state of limbo. And so life just keeps moving along day by day, week by week, month by month, and year by year. Limbo women attend family holidays, friend events like birthdays and anniversaries, and office Christmas parties of their limbo husbands. They stand like a trophy next to a man who needs a wife to show off, to prove to the world, I am not gay, here is my proof. The limbo wife always, the limbo wife allays the suspicions that everyone else has about the limbo man. It confuses the public at large who thinks it is able to identify people of different sexual orientation because gay men don't get married, right? Or even if they do, they don't stay married, right? Wrong. Limbo men stay married as long as their wives stay in limbo with them. Limbo women are willing to fine-tune their brains not to think about what they don't have. Rather, they try to focus on what they do have. I have a nice home. I have beautiful children. I have friendly neighbors. I have good in-laws who don't find too much fault with me, namely because you're covering up the family secret for them. I have a companion when I go on vacation. I have good friends. I have a good friendship. I have a husband who won't leave. That's right. Limbo women, he won't leave. He's going to be by your side forever and ever because a limbo man doesn't leave. If he leaves, that means he might be dealing with whom he really is, and what he does on the side might become front and center. This would upset the balance in his life and throw him out of the sphere of being emotionally straight. And that's a scary world that he just doesn't want to have to face. Life as a limbo man is too easy for him. It's also safe and secure. Want to know something funny? Limbo men think that their limbo wives know the truth, at least on some level. They think that all of the little clues that they have been confronted on prove that you know the truth somewhere in their limbo minds. And believe it or not, they feel for that reason you accept who they are. You can accept their little dalliances and dives into that foreign world that neither of you really want to talk about. They think that your avoidance of the subject after a while is a form of acceptance. They don't see you running anywhere, and they also see you accepting that marriage can be built on friendship. You're giving them the biggest gift of all, the end of sexual pressure. You've learned how to live with them in sexual limbo or abstinence. Your limbo libido has gone off into the distance, either with someone else or without the door or body. Whatever, he breathes a big sigh of relief. You are now the perfect wife. Of course, you're not really the perfect wife. He still finds fault with you because you're a woman. And he is a gay man in disguise. It never is quite the right chemistry. He's never really happy living in between two worlds. He's comfortable, but never really happy. And he'll find ways to blame you for his unhappiness. It will be little things that make you feel stupid. After all, he thinks you are stupid. He thinks you know he's gay and you're willing to live with it. How smart could you be? And so the years will pass. Your best years will pass in front of your eyes. Yes, the best years, those years when you could have been living a life without deceit, contempt, and sexual rejection. And before you know it, you'll look around and realize that you can't get back what you have lost. You'll never know how far you could have gone in life because you'll never have the cheering team cheering you on. You will never be inspired to write poems that have love and hope, but rather your poetry talks of sadness and loneliness. I suppose there's a market out there for poetry for the forlorn. Someone may be smart enough to publish a book on poetry for the limbo woman. It's sure to sell a million. And so, my dear limbo women, my heart does go out to you. I feel as if you are walking in the valley of no zone. Not quite here, not quite there. But the good news is that you can move into another zone. You can join the Freedom Trail and look at life as a new adventure, just waiting for you. You can make a decision that you've had enough of limbo land and want to spend whatever remaining years you have finding yourself a new sense of enjoyment. You can learn that life can be a romantic comedy. You can laugh and love again no matter how old you are. Romance is never an age, it's a state of mind. And even though living with your limbo man has dulled yours, you can still take your life back and live it the way you want to. You may not win the battle, but you can definitely win the war. I still love that article, too. And even though it was written many, many years ago, I think it's still very relative to our women today and to the lives that we lead, and especially if you're a limbo woman who's caught in between the two worlds of your limbo husband, gay husband. It takes time. I understand that. If you need support, you just write to me. Both these articles are in my book, The Gay Husband Checklist for Women Who Wonder. You can see all of my books on my website at gayhusbands.com. Every book you read will be encouraging you to move in a positive direction. If you need help and support, you know that I am here for you. All you have to do is write to me at bonkaye@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. And I really appreciate you being with me tonight. I think my guest is coming here in our last few minutes, so let's just check. Hello.
Hello, Bonnie. I'm sorry I got the time wrong. I was just calling in to join the show.
Well,
I apologize.
Well, that's okay. I'm going to reschedule for everybody listening. This is my very, very special guest, Dr. Margalef Bielstedt. Even though you weren't here, I hope you don't mind. I read them your chapter on how to build your self-esteem up. So we talked about your book.
Wonderful.
And
I'm very glad you are a trooper. You filled in beautifully.
Yes, I was filling in for you with you. So it was no problem. And then, you know, I went through some of my own articles there. But I really appreciate it. I'm sorry for the mix-up. And we will definitely reschedule this in the next few weeks when you have the time. So everybody, you heard for yourself, Dr. Fellestad is here, even though we're going to be ending. Dr. Fellestad, can you just tell people now how, you know, I told them in the past, and I'm hoping you were here, we'll talk a little bit about your newsletter, because it's always such an inspiration to the women. I post it in our support group every month, but everybody's entitled to get that. Free for you, right?
Yes, it's free. It comes out at the first of the month. All they have to do is email me and request to be put on the mailing list. They can email me at margalestherapy@gmail.com.
And if you can't get that address, just email me and I'll send it over to you. I'll send you the link to the newsletter because I know so many of our women read it and they love it. And it really helps them center themselves on what they need to do. And let's just talk a little bit about
getting
your book.
Excellent. I'm so glad.
Yes, and also your book truly inspired people and changed lives all the time, because when women hear you on the show and they tell me they went out and got your book and they read it, it's the most informative way to get past the pain that they're going through or to help them in their healing. So Dr. Fellestad's two books are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and every major publisher you can imagine. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes, correct.
Okay, because, you know, once again, no matter what, you get it on Kindle also? Is it still available now?
Yes, it's on Kindle and paperback.
Okay, so you can just go to Amazon like I'm doing now. And if you put in, you'll get it on my newsletter and on this broadcast. But you can go see Dr. Fellestad's books. The first one, which really saved the sanity of so many of our women, was Stop Caretaking the Borderline or Narcissist, How to End the Drama. And then her latest book is After You're Saving Yourself, Now It's Time to Heal from the Narcissistic Relationship, A Caretaker's Guide to Recovery, Empowerment and Transformation. And this is what I read Dr. Fellestad's chapter from on building your self-esteem. In the few minutes we have left, you know, maybe you can give some encouraging words as far as rebuilding self-esteem, that it is a process. We were talking about your difference between how you phrase messages to yourself instead of negative messages, how to make them positive. And do you think that's a big factor in starting to feel better?
It's probably the biggest factor. Self-compassion is at the heart of healing. When you are kind and considerate to yourself, so many people who are involved with narcissists are kind and considerate to the narcissist, but then they interject the negative things the narcissist says to them, and they start criticizing and demeaning and putting themselves down. So positive, supportive statements, self-forgiveness, being just normally kind to yourself, not expecting yourself to be perfect. All of that really starts the healing process, and that's really at the core.
I think some people never really had positive reinforcement. They go from bad lives with narcissistic parents, and this is their sense of what normal family life is. And so when they find a narcissist who can trap them because they're naturally charming and able to woo you in the beginning, that is something that may feel very familiar to them, so they're easily trapped. Do you find that to be the case?
Yes, that's very true. Narcissists really look for people who will give in and be trapped and thrilled by their attention. And after they have the person locked in and committed, then they start the attacking. And they often alternate throughout the relationship being nice and then being horrific and hurtful.
Also, do you think that women have been trained from the time they're babies to be people pleasers more so than men, and that we're looked upon
the research,
always helping everybody? Mm-hmm.
Yes, the research shows that is the case, that women are much more forgiving. They are more willing to put their own needs secondary. They often doubt their own thoughts and feelings, especially if someone else is telling them that they're wrong.
So do you think that this is more so with people who come from narcissistic families, or do you think it's women in general that we're just more vulnerable and more open?
I think women in general are more vulnerable and open, and women tend to have a lot higher levels of empathy. But despite that, when you have a narcissistic parent, you're going to be trained to always do things their way. And then when you get out as an adult, you're very easily attracted to the same kind of person.
And I'm wondering also, sometimes when women are just attracted to broken men because they think, they themselves are broken and they can fix the man. Especially if a man's telling them, I love you.
Yes, that's where that over-empathy kicks in, and they're looking to take care of someone else, often feeling that if I take care of them, then that person will in turn take care of me. But then they don't follow through and expect that caretaking from the other person, and so it becomes way out of balance.
Well, very unfortunately, our time is coming to an end, and I'm so sorry we missed each other tonight, but I know that you'll be back in a few weeks. We'll rearrange it, and I'm so excited that I got to
be glad to.
And everyone,
yes,
once
thank
again,
you very much, Bonnie.
I'll put on the link to this show on Dr. Falstad's books. We'll be on there later this evening. And to all of our listeners, hopefully her words that I read to you will inspire you to start giving yourself more positive messages. And we'll be back together again, Dr. Falstad, in a few weeks. So thank you so much for even getting in here late so I could just hear your voice. It's always so comforting to me.
Well, thank you, Bonnie.
Okay, and to all our listeners, a very good week, a good night. If you'd like to be on my newsletter list, just let me know. And if you want Dr. Falstad's newsletter, write to me and I'll give you the address. All right, to everyone, have a wonderful night, and good night to you. And thank you, Dr. Falstad. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye now.